Hey, Alan here. There's something really weird that happens with the audio in this last part. It's funny because during the call with Tom, I kept thinking I wanted to ask him about the idea of ordered systems versus a lot of times synchronicity gets described as non-linear events. And here we have a very queer intrusion of non-linear events. For whatever reason, even though there was no lag on the call, we were all able to understand each other very clearly. Something in the Skype recorder recorded some sort of weird lag. So my voice, a lot of times Tom and I are going back and forth, it sounds like I'm just talking over him. I hope everyone realizes I didn't do that. During the actual call, I wouldn't do that to Tom, but it for whatever reason, it recorded my audio, his audio on a lag, and mine, something. Basically, what I'm trying to say is there's gonna be a few points where it's gonna be a little kind of annoying. I thought of just cutting those chunks out, but I think it's understandable this way if I just if I cut out the really egregious parts and leave some of the things that at least you can kind of understand when it sounds like I'm talking, I might be responding to something that Tom hasn't finished saying for another 10 seconds. I don't know exactly what the best solution was here, but I think it's so few spaces that I'd rather release this audio and hopefully you guys tell me if it's that horrible. Thanks a lot. Enjoy. Bye.
You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You only tell me perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. A million times I ask you, and then I ask you over again. You only answer perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. If you can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. And I don't wanna wind up being parted, broken hearted. So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. And please don't tell me. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. You can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. And I don't wanna wind up being parted, broken hearted. So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. And please don't tell me. Perhaps, 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 perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
I would
is
like
just
to clarify
probable,
is when you talk about this idea
right?
of lowering your entropy, granted, this is, I guess I'm just curious how that would play into the probability functions. In the sense of, if does our probability still stays high? Yes. Obviously, probability and entropy not the same thing. But I would assume they're in some way related. Or is this just a trick of the language?
I think you're having a language problem. But let me talk to it a little bit. One of the attributes of this virtual reality and we conscious entities that are playing in this virtual reality is that, you know, all good schoolhouses, this is a schoolhouse to help us grow up. All good schoolhouses have to have feedback. And we have lots of feedback trails here that point us in the right direction. Because if we do things wrong, we do them for the wrong reasons. If we have, you know, if we're working out of greed and fear and anger and stuff, our life starts to suck. It starts to get really bad and so on. You know, that's why we've created this, you know, go read the news. That's why we've created this thing. You know, that's what we create. Now, on the other hand, if we act well, I was just saying, you know, your life is full of joy and fun, and it's really neat. Well, it's the same for us collectively. You know, if we are more love-like, then our reality is kinder, gentler, and our institutions are more interested in serving than they are in ripping us off. So all of that works. But the connection between probability and entropy is this. We create this reality by making measurements. You know, it's the measurement problem, right? By having intent. A measurement actually brings something into this reality. That means brings it into your data stream. That's what into this reality means. Your reality is all the data that's in all the various players' consciousness. That's what makes the reality. Okay, so this reality is modifiable based on our intent. If we have an intention that is, you know, that something will happen, an intention that something will be this way. Let's say that this person has scaly skin or something. We have an intention that that will go away. Then we raise the probability that that will go away, because our intention modifies the probability. The way things work is there are possibilities. Okay, our future is full of possibilities. Now, we get to a time where we make a measurement. Okay, the future comes because the clock ticks, and there it is. Now, there's a future coming, this next tick, and what is it going to be? Well, you look at all the possibilities. These possibilities all are associated with the probability, because all possibilities are not equally probable. Some possibilities are really out there, maybe one in a million, and other possibilities are much more likely. So you take all the possibilities, you put them in a distribution, a probability distribution, where we look at the probabilities. Then you take a random draw from the distribution. That doesn't mean you take a random draw from all the possibilities. You take a random draw of the probability distribution of the possibilities. There's a difference. So the things that are more probable are more likely to be drawn out on this random draw. And I just did a talk about that just 4 or 5 days ago at this thing I did in Huntsville this past weekend. And if you really want to see that in graphics and whatever, that'll be out on YouTube in a month or two whenever it gets edited. And you can get this more graphical aid, you know, that'll help you with this concept. But what happens is that you, when you make a measurement, make a choice, and that means open your eyes, take in data, something that requires information to come down your data stream to your consciousness. Okay, that's what making a measurement means. It means you do something that creates data in your data stream. So you make a measurement, and the way it's done is that a random draw is taken from the probability distribution of the possibilities, and that's what happens. That then becomes the present, and so on. So that's how a probable reality works. Now, you can modify that probability distribution with your intent. So there's a whole bunch of us, and we're going to have a picnic 2 weekends from now, and it's going to be the whole family out in the park, and we want it to be a nice day. And if we all have a real strong intent that it's going to be a nice day, the probability of it being a nice day is much greater. If we all are worried that it's going to be rainy and a nasty day, then the probability of it being a nasty day is more probable. You see, so we get to make this world, this future, according to our intents. Now, our intent doesn't necessarily, you know, it just changes the probability. You don't force what you want to happen. All you do is change the probability of it happening. So if you had something that was very rare, and maybe it was one in a million, and you really wanted that to happen, so you put a lot of tenet into it, so you change it from one in a million to one in a thousand, well, that's three orders of magnitude you've changed it by, you know, a factor of 1,000. Wow, that's a lot of change, but chances are it's still not going to happen because it's 1 in 1,000, you see. So you don't know that this idea that you make your reality, it's not necessarily that you just get what you want whenever you want it. It is that you modify the probabilities. Now, so here we are making choices. And let's say, and that's our free will and our entropy. So we make low entropy choices that are loving choices about other people, not about ourselves. It's not our fear. It's our love that's making the choices. Well, when we do that, that loving intent modifies the probability for things that are nice, that are loving, that are whatever to happen, because that's our intent. So those kinds of things happen to us. You know, if our intent is the other way, if we have a miserable negative intent, then those things happen to us tend to be more negative and miserable. It's the power of positive thinking and the power of negative thinking and the power of the placebo effect. All of these things work on the same idea. That's how mental healing works. It's the same way. So intent modifies probability. And if we lower entropy or raising entropy, that, you know, modifies our intent. What we do is a reflection of our intent. First, we have an intent, and that intent gets expressed in action. And that intent modifies the probability. So you can see they are connected. We are lowering or raising our entropy according to our intent, but our intent helps create the choices that we have and the world that we live in. So they are all connected, but it's not a direct sort of thing.
I think you explained it very well. I'm just sort of pondering on the connection there. There's a very old school of thought. I think this comes out of the Greek philosopher Empedocles, which said that the more love there was in the universe, the more chaotic the universe was, that chaos was an expression of love, and that control was an expression of fear. And they saw this as directly related. And you can even see this in Dante's Inferno. There's an expression where he talks about the crucifixion, the moment of crucifixion of Christ, this ultimate expression of love, actually sent out this huge ripple of chaos throughout the world. And so whatever, so it's just an idea that's always sort of intrigued me as different philosophers have played with this. So when I hear you sort of talking about the idea of love being an expression of reduced entropy, I'm just sort of pondering it over in my mind. Again, this is a language issue, to be sure, but I just sort of wanted to hear you speak to that concept of, it seems like we still have massive amounts of, there are still plenty of potentialities in the world. But I understand absolutely where you're taking this.
Okay, didn't understand your question real well. That was my problem. What's happening that when you talk about the crucifixion and it created a lot of chaos, but that's not the key thing. You know, it's that it is true that fear feeds control. That's true. It's not true that love feeds chaos. Chaos is there. And in contrast to love, chaos often seems bigger. You know, you notice the chaos next to the love because one kind of would highlight the other. But the thing is that let's just take that crucifixion as the example you gave. What that did is it started a religion. It started a spread of a philosophy. And in that philosophy, we have kind of a seminal statement that says God is love, and it spread that philosophy in a much wider way, you see, than it would have happened otherwise. So yes, there was chaos, but the chaos was already there. The love didn't create the chaos. The point was the chaos was there, and chaos may kind of rear up its ugly head and roar when it sees a challenge, love being a challenge. But the love doesn't create the chaos. The chaos is there. The love combats the chaos. It does moving toward order. And chaos does sometimes react to it. And, you know, like anything reacts to it. You do something that's very loving and caring, and it fixes a lot of things. Well, maybe there's a lot of people don't want things fixed. They like the status quo just the way it is. They're making money off that status quo. And they may get up and roar and create a lot of chaos that maybe if they're successful with their chaos, they may overrun that.
Sure,
love.
And I think it's also a sort of
the chaos was there. The love just
different philosophical approaches
it up,
because
you know,
right,
got it excited
the idea
to
of
work.
Things being
so
ordered.
Love,
you know, the in one respect, an ultimate expression of an ordered universe could be, you know, Mussolini's Italy. You know, there's this sort of joke, right? You know, you can make the trains run on time. That could be a very ordered system, but it's certainly not a particularly loving system. And it's just sort of, these are mental exercises. I'm not trying to paint any, yeah.
No, they're good. They're good. Yeah, they're real good exercises because they help us define terms and what we mean by the terms. You see, so they are very good. Well, yes, you can talk about Mussolini and his trains or Hitler or something. Hitler created a lot of order because now everybody, you know, marched together in goose step, and, you know, that was order, and everybody was going to come under one leader, and that's order. That is the changing the entropy in the physical world, right? We're talking about lowering the entropy, changing the entropy within consciousness. Two different systems altogether, you see? So Mussolini may have forced those trains to run on time because he shot a few people who were, you know, part of the problem, and that wasn't a loving system. And he did lower the entropy in the system where, in the transportation system, let's say, because now it was more orderly. But at the same time, he was creating huge amounts of entropy as he did that, because shooting people that you believe are part of the problem creates a lot of randomness, creates, you know, it raises entropy that's divisive. It doesn't make people, you know, pull together and work together. It makes people frightened. So what he did had a local effect of lowering entropy and also a local effect of raising entropy, but that has only to do with the physical world, with this virtual world and what's going on on there. I would say that he raised entropy more than he lowered it. He
right,
raised
right.
a whole lot of entropy, and he reduced little bits and pieces of it. The train running was not a really big thing in the world, and as part of what he did, you know, his place in World War, you know, World War II, that was a much bigger thing of what he did. So he raised a lot of entropy and lowered it in this spot or that spot. So if we look at the total, you know, Mussolini should not be known as a lower of entropy. You see, that would be just singling out a single thing. But again, that's all physical world. And in the world of consciousness, we evolve the quality of our consciousness by lowering our entropy and de-evolve by raising it. Now, in the physical world, it's similar. It's not the physical. The world is totally different, but it's a different system, right? And entropy raises and lowers within a system. So entropy is very system specific. But in general, in the world, we are all better off. The world progresses, and we are in a higher state of being in our physical world if the entropy is lowered. So we have a Hitler and a Mussolini who raised the entropy, you know, 100 or 1,000 times more than they lowered it. But the net effect was raising the entropy. Not good. Had Hitler and Mussolini and Tojo, I guess, decided instead that they would take those resources and, you know, house the people without housing and feed the poor, you know, that would have lowered entropy and we all would have been better off. That would have made everything work better. Instead, they decided to, you know, take land and run over the people with free will who disagreed with them, and so on. So, even in our physical world, lowering entropy is a good thing. Now, lowering entropy, if at the same time you raise entropy, you know, an act can do both. there may be an action that you could take that would lower entropy some and raise entropy some. If it mostly lowers entropy, it's mostly a good thing. If it mostly raises entropy, it's mostly a bad thing.
Yeah.
But everything isn't black and white. You know, there are things that have some good in them and have some bad in them. And entropy is a good way to sort that out.
That was excellent. A lot of really good points. You know, we don't want to keep you too long, so whenever you feel like you have to go, please let us know. I would like to ask you another question, though. And then
as long as it's productive and we're doing things that you find interesting and useful, then that's what I'm all about. So we'll just keep going until either everybody's tired or it's not useful anymore. We're repeating ourselves. So.
All right. For me, I mean, like another 30 minutes would be ideal, but I mean, if you guys want to hang on, whatever. But I guess to kind of go off on another tangent, reincarnation, past lives, that kind of thing, and how to tie that into NDE. Do you have any insights into that? Is this more theoretical for you in terms of your interest in it, or from some of your out-of-body or other kinds of practices and applications? Do you have any insights into that? Do you think that is a feasible thing that's going on?
Sure. Well, in my system and my, you know, the MBT theory, if you will, reincarnation, which I don't call reincarnation, I just call an experience packet. We have units of consciousness that have experiences, and they come in packets, which then we would say the packet is a lifetime, some virtual reality. All experience happens in virtual realities. If you're not in a virtual reality, then you're not having experience. A virtual reality is a reality with a rule set. Without a rule set, there's no interaction defined. There's no ways to interact or connect with no rule set. You need rules to define the game. So even if you have a reality where you can do nothing but trade information, let's say a chat room, there still needs to be a rule set. You have to have rules that define the protocols for the language, for the exchange of information. How do you exchange that information? What does that information mean? What are the symbols? All that is rules. So you need a virtual reality to have experience. So there are all kinds of virtual realities. You know, our virtual reality, we call our physical universe, is just one among many virtual realities. And they all aren't, they all don't have such strict rule sets as the physical virtual realities do, like our universe. That's a much stricter rule set. You can have rule sets that aren't so strict and have different kinds of virtual reality, like your dream state. Your dreaming reality is another virtual reality. So we have that. Now, the theory requires reincarnation. It's a logical part of the process. The theory won't work if you don't have reincarnation because, like I say, that's one of the logical processes that's required in the overall theory. It's a have to have. And the reason is that the whole point of us in this virtual reality as consciousness, having these experiences, making choices, and raising and lowering our entropy, you know, evolving or de-evolving. Okay, that whole, let me see, where is I going with this? The whole point of that, right, is to grow up, is to change, is to learn. So if you're learning and growing up, that means you were one way and you're now a different way. That doesn't work well if you do it all in parallel. Learning is a serial thing. That's why they don't try to teach us calculus in kindergarten. You see, learning doesn't work. You don't get it all at once. You have to take it in pieces. You do everything that you can learn at step one, and that enables you to learn more in step two, which enables you to learn more in step three. Learning tends to be serial. So growing up is a serial process. Now, we could parallel process it. We could, say, have 10 reincarnations going at the same time. So we have 10, our consciousness is split in 10 ways. Each one has an avatar, and each one is learning. But now those 10 aren't able to take advantage of the things that will be learned in each lifetime, you see? It's like they're all done at the same level. So if where you were was in third grade, then you have 10 third graders that are all in the third grade. And they will come back and pool all their experiences in a third grade, and that will be your third grade experiences. And that took 10. That was a parallel processing. Or you can just do third grade just once, one individuated unit of consciousness, and then you can come back and add that experience, you know, to the whole. And then you can go do fourth grade, and then you can go do fifth grade. So the whole gets the benefit of integrating your experience. Integrating a whole bunch of experiences all about the same is not that efficient way to do it. Now, the way the system works is that most of your incarnations are going to be serial. Okay, you're going to go one at a time because that way you have cumulative learning. But you may have a special situation where two at a time would be very instructive. Like you may be both father and son, and you may be both of those. Now you get two perspectives on the same thing, which could be valuable to you. So you can parallel process, but you need to be able to have a string of experience packets. Even if you did them 10 at a time, you need to do 10, and then you'd need to do another 10, and then you'd need to do another 10. That would just be inefficient, as it is to take one or two, and then another one or two, and another one or two. That's a more efficient use of the resources to create a learning situation. So you have to learn cumulative. If it's a one shot and it's not a series of experience packets, then it's like, okay, you're in first grade, now learn everything. Okay, everything from alphabet to advanced calculus, we're going to do it all this 1 year. Well, you know that wouldn't work because you have to start at the beginning and build your logical process, putting that together. Your understanding has to come in pieces because you can't understand C until you understand B. You can't understand, you know, things until you're ready. So it takes many lifetimes to grow up. It's not just do it all now. Becoming love is a tough thing. Getting rid of all the fear and ego is a tough thing. And it's not like, well, you got one shot. You need to do it all right now. You know, become love. It's not going to happen. It's too, all these changes have to occur at the being level. It's not an intellectual process. You don't become love because you can think all loving thoughts. You have to be loving, not think about it, but be it. The being is a slow, difficult. That's an evolutionary process to become someone different. So that's why you have to have a reincarnation, multiple lives, because otherwise the system wouldn't work. The virtual reality would not be useful. The whole system just is, wouldn't work if you didn't have that. So that's a necessary part of the system. And in my experiences in the larger consciousness system, I indeed many times have followed that process along. I've been with somebody while they were dying, and as they, when they died, I was with them in that experience, and I was still with them during the transition and with them right up until they decided to go back into another being, and I could be with them then. In other words, you can follow the transition all along. It's all a continuous process, and having done that numbers of times, I know that, that's the way it is from an experiential viewpoint. But from a logical viewpoint, it has to be that way or growth would be impossible. If growth's impossible, then what's the point of a virtual reality to help people grow? And what's the point of breaking into multiple pieces that interact with each other for growth? And the whole system breaks down and no longer makes any sense. So the way you build up a model is you configure the model so that it explains the data, in other words, so that it makes sense. Well, reincarnation is a necessary logical component of a model that makes sense of all the data. Not only do you have NDEs and people who, you have, 5 and 6 year old children that'll tell you all about the plane they flew in World War I or something, and you get enough facts that you actually can verify there was such a person in such a plane. And there's lots of data that is out there in the world that if you're going to fit all the data, then and if you're going to fit our purpose and what we're doing here and the nature of reality, then reincarnation is just a necessary logical component. Otherwise, you don't fit all the data. You may make materialists happy, but you don't fit the data. And I have confidence in the data that I have experienced, and I can look at data that other people discuss and talk about, and I have a pretty good idea whether that data is real data or something they thought of, because I've been there and done that and seen it, and I know how it works. So I have a lot of experience in judging the value of data, whether it sounds like it could indeed have happened that way, or whether it sounds like indeed it couldn't. So I see lots of data that needs to be fit there on that subject, and my theory fits it by including data packets that you do serially, because you have to evolve, and evolution is a slow, long process that's cumulative. Evolution doesn't happen all in a day. You can't take all the critters and start with an amoeba and say, all right, by sundown, you know, we're going to have the whole thing done. It just doesn't work that way. And evolving consciousness is like that too. It takes lots of iterations.
Thanks. Tom, I was wondering, we are more and more building a virtual reality, you know. At some point, we could get lost in the virtual reality we are constructing with computers and things like that. What is the ultimate point of lowering our entropy? Should we become light at some point, or do you understand what I mean?
Should we become light?
No, I mean, if we lower our entropy more and more and more, what could be the ultimate state of that system?
Do you want to know the in-between states or the final state? Where are we going?
The final state. What's the purpose, and what would be the future and the final state of such a...
Okay. First of all, you have to understand that it's not a closed system. Okay, if we had just N numbers of consciousness, okay, there is just exactly, you know, 10 billion individuated units of consciousness that exist, and 7.5 billion of them are right here, and eventually all 10 will be here, and that's it on this planet, and that's all the consciousness there is. Then eventually you figure that the whole thing, the whole group, will grow up and become love and have lower entropy and lower entropy and lower entropy, and then they'll get to some point where they're just, everybody's done. You know, the entropy is really, really low, and what's the point anymore? So we'll all sit on clouds and play harps and things like that, because we will have all grown. Well, it's not a closed system. There's always new coming in. It's just like all the students that are in school right now. That's not all the students there are. When the ones graduate out of kindergarten going to first grade, another whole set comes in to kindergarten, because it's not a closed system. There's always new kids being generated that have to end up in kindergarten. So our system's like that too. So one, it's not a closed system. Everybody's not going to end up at lower entropy state. Secondly, this thing about lowering your entropy is a thing in process that really you never get to the end of it. There's not a point where everybody gets to zero entropy, so that's the end of the game. This is an evolutionary process. Evolution keeps going. Evolution is an open-ended process. Evolution doesn't stop. It gets to a point, and from that point on, it evolves into the possibilities. And then it picks certain possibilities over others, and at that point, it evolves into the possibilities. Unless you get to a point where there are no more possibilities, then the system is stalled out. But that is an unlikely process when you've got billions of things interacting with each other, that you get to a point there are no more choices. You see? So the way we evolve as a group, talking about conscious entities, the way we evolve as a group is by making making the effort by changing, by taking a higher consciousness, or a higher, let me not say higher consciousness, but a higher amount of entropy, a lower quality of consciousness, and evolving it forward, right? That's how we do that. And that takes effort. So the system can't say, well, look, here's some low consciousness beings. These are really, really low entropy beings, some high quality of consciousness. I'm getting my words mixed up here. I'm talking too fast. But anyway, we have high quality individuals, high quality of consciousness, low entropy. So why don't I just duplicate all of those? Why don't I just delete all the ones that aren't at that level and duplicate all the ones that are, and then we'd be done? There's no value in that. You see, there's no evolution in that. Evolution is growth and change. All that does is you basically duplicated what you had. You're still no further along in what you had. It's the same thing. You write a book, okay? And writing a book, you lower entropy. You take your thoughts, your ideas, your feelings, you put them in this nice structured language and whatever. You've lowered entropy. Now, if you just take that book and make 1,000 copies, does that lower entropy 1,000 times more? No, all it does is leave you right where you were. It just gives you, you know, more stuff. That'd be like evolution. Okay, you finally evolved to you had tiny little things. You had amoebas. You had this. You had that. Eventually, you got all the way up to a goldfish. Well, I know. Let's just duplicate and fill the whole world full of goldfish, and then we're done. Doesn't work that way. You see, evolution is a process of growth, not of copy and paste. You don't evolve by copying and pasting. You evolve by changing what you are into something else. So, one, as I said, it's not a closed system. There's new conscious entities coming into the system all the time. And two, it's not about the entropy of the whole is indeed lowering, but that's not the goal. That's where we get to. Well, see, I'm getting confusing. It is the goal of evolution, but you don't jump there by copying. So it's a goal you continually work at. And like all evolution, you never actually reach a goal. We're not at the end of, say, human evolution. You know, 100,000 years from now, humans will probably be very different than they are now. And 100,000 years ago, they were different than they are now. And, you know, 2 million years ago, they're very different than they are now. So it's change is the key. So we're never done. Now let's look at the ego and the love part of this. So I run into people all the time that say, man, I can't wait till this is over because, you know, I don't have any fear and I don't have an ego. And when I'm done with this one, I'm out of here. I'm not coming back to this hellhole anymore. This place sucks. Well, there's a couple of problems with that. The reason that they feel no joy and a lot of frustration is because they're full of fear and full of ego. That's one thing. Okay. The second thing is, this idea of I'm out of here, I'm tired of this, I don't want to do this, all those things start with I. It's I. It's all about them. This is not exactly the being of love that's talking. If you grow up enough that you're not really learning a whole lot coming back here because you've already lowered your entropy enough that this game isn't that challenging anymore, well, you get new challenges. It's not just about you. It's about others. You come here to teach. You come here to be a good example. You come here to help others lower their entropy, grow the quality of their consciousness, you see. And when are you done with that? Well, new consciousness is coming in at the bottom all the time. You're never done with it. So the people who say, I'm out of here, I'm never coming back, I don't want to be involved with this mess, that's just ego talking. These are people who need to come back into this mess because they're really not doing too well because they're very self-focused and self-centered, and it's all about them not wanting to have to deal with this mess. So you see, the idea that somewhere we get out, we get issued a harp and have to sit on a cloud and play it for the rest of eternity, that doesn't ever happen. You know, that's a metaphor, right? That just doesn't happen. There's always something to do. There's always something to give, somebody to help, a role to play in the overall evolution of consciousness. And you can play roles in other reality frames other than this virtual reality. There's lots of other virtual realities at various states that you can also play in, different games that will challenge you. So that's the, you know, that's kind of the idea, is that you get to a point where you feel like you're not learning much. Well, probably that's your ego talking. If it's not your ego talking, and that's true, there's plenty of people need your help. So there is no end. We keep working, helping, growing, becoming, improving our quality. And it's just like trying to make entropy go to zero here in the physical world. It's impossible. You can't get to zero. You can only get asymptotic to zero. Okay, but you never quite get there, because there's never an end, because this is an open process. The larger consciousness system itself is changing. It's evolving. It's growing. It's not going to be like it is now, you know, a billion years from now. It'll be something different. It wasn't like it is now a billion years ago. It's a growing, it's a real system. It's trying to survive by keeping its entropy low, by working. Because you see, if you don't work at it, if you're not constantly growing, what happens? Entropy starts to go up. If you stop working and stop learning and stop growing, you immediately start to dissipate, disintegrate, degenerate. The only thing that keeps entropy from increasing is your effort. If the larger consciousness system said, oh, all right, we're pretty good here. We got a lot of low entropy. Let's just quit. That would be the beginning of it all unraveling, and entropy would start to grow. Okay, what was loving would start to have ego creeping back in it, would start to click up into the good guys and the not so good guys, would start to degenerate. The only thing that keeps it moving forward is effort, challenge, meeting that challenge with choices, free will choices. So there really is no practical end to it. We're part of this larger system, and we're part of its strategy for evolving. Well, and I just suspect we will not run out of that job. That's a lifetime job. When your lifetime,
this conversation never ends. This is
okay. Thanks.
Still so many things to explore, and so much that I would like to pick your brain about. I would absolutely love to have you back on again at some point in the future if you'd be up for it. This was really a real pleasure. But if you would be so kind, before we let you go, for listeners, remind them your website, where they can find more of your work, and hopefully people can kind of start looking into all that if they haven't done so already, because I'm really impressed by your work for the last few years. I've been very, very impressed.
Okay, sure. I'd be glad to leave a calling card. You can find my stuff by going to Google and putting in Thomas Campbell, or by putting in My Big Toe. And what you will find is a website. Actually, you'll find several websites, but one of the websites you'll find will be mine, which is www.mybigtoe.com. All the letters run together as usual. That website will have about the books, about me. It'll have some synopsis of the books, and it'll have all the slides for my presentations and that kind of thing. Just kind of go around in it. It also has a forum attached to it. The forum has tens of thousands of questions answered, and it has some moderators who are very good at answering questions. And I'm on and off of it, but you know, I have a lot of other things to do and a lot of other email to get and questions to answer. So I don't answer all the questions, but I do come to it probably once, twice a week. I'm there and answering some questions, that sort of thing. So go to the forum. It's a very good place to get your questions answered. There's some smart people there. Besides that, you will find MBT events. MBT is an My Big Toe, www.mbtevents.com. That's a website that is run by Keith and Donna Warner, and they are my organizers. So they're the ones that organize me to go speak someplace or do a workshop someplace. They do all the work. All I do is do what I'm told, stand up and talk, and then sit down. They do all the work and take all the risk. So that's a good website. They have a lot of interesting things there. If you go there, look up a click on, I think it's called Good Stuff or Free Stuff, and scroll around in that. You'll find a lot of very interesting things in a group of things called Gems from the Forum. And these were a few things that they picked specially out of the forum that they thought were particularly pertinent, like an introduction or an orientation to virtual reality, an orientation to virtual the larger consciousness system. These sorts of things that are kind of basic. What is the larger consciousness system, and what are its attributes, and how is it to go there, and what do you, what do you get, and what do you don't get, and what, how do you tell which is real, what isn't, et cetera. It's just basic things like that. So there's whole lots of things there. The last thing that I'll mention is YouTube. I've got about 120 videos on YouTube, which are all of my workshops, interviews, anything I do that I can get the video or a good link to the video, I put there. So there's lots and lots of things. The one that's probably the best summary still right now is Calgary Workshop. 3 days, Friday, an introduction, Saturday, all the theory, how it works, why it works, what it means, and then Sunday applications. So that would be a good place to go. My books, which you can buy at my website, of course, you can also buy on Amazon or in your local neighborhood bookstore. If they don't have them, they can order them. But you don't have to buy them. I have them free on Google Books. So if you go to Google Books, you will find they're separate books, book one, book two, and book three, on Google Books, and if you can stand to read a book on a computer monitor, then there they are. You don't have to buy them. The only downside to that, besides reading it at the computer monitor, is it's the first book. I put that on there immediately when I published the books, so it went on very early. Since then, the books have been updated every time they've been printed, which is like 4 or 5 times, and the updates altogether probably don't amount to 5%, but there are little things that were confusing that people complained about that I made less confusing, and some material that I added. But it's more like a paragraph here and a paragraph there, and maybe a couple of thousand typos and wording, making the wording better, improving the English. So it's free though, and it's probably a 98% of what you'd get if you got something recent. So that's it. That's where you can get all my stuff. And I also have a Facebook presence. I don't know how you find me on Facebook. I guess you could put my name in, but Tom Campbell isn't exactly a rare name. So anyway, Facebook is there. And there's lots of other things going on too. There's a couple of Facebook sites that are not mine, but are still about my big toe. And there's alternative forums as well, where people have decided to start their own. And there's lots of stuff going on. You just have to take a little time to find it on the web. So that's it.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for coming in and speaking to us.
We really appreciate it.
And thank you so
much. See you next time. I don't know what time it is in France right now, but thank you.
See you next time, guys. Thank you for giving me the invitation. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Boys to Men, Jodeci, Shy, Silk. R&B music is back and bigger than ever. And with lyrics hot enough to fry an egg on, we have an exclusive MTV world premiere. Yeah, a hot new group from Atlanta that we're hearing big things from. G-Spot.
Take off your dress right now. Looking at your body, and I wanna say, ow. You go to the shining, you got extensions in your hair. You say your kid's in the upper room, but you know that I don't care.
Baby, buzz me in the door. Pull up your skirt, child. Now pull it up some more. your panties are green and your bra is pink. Now suck on my tic tac so your breath won't stay.
All I wanna do is suck your big toe, suck it real slow. I wanna suck your big fat toe.
Your toe tastes so sweet. You got a big cone on it. Ooh, I love the extra meat.
Your mouth says no, but your body says yes. I'm looking at the backside, baby, and thinking, damn, this bitch is class.
All I wanna do is suck your big toe, suck it real slow. I wanna suck your big fat toe.
This little piggy wants sex. This little piggy wants pleasing. But your big toe is the best. Hey girl, that's why, baby, I love you, baby. I love every little thing about you, baby. I love that nose ring you got in your nose, baby. And I love your big fat toe. I love the way you tell the cops you ain't seen me in 2 years, baby. Hey, no, come here, baby, let me suck on your toe. Don't run, I would never hit a woman unless she owed me money. Come on.
All I wanna do is suck your big toe, suck it real slow. I wanna suck your big fat toe. All I wanna do is suck your big toe, suck it real slow.
I wanna suck your big fat toe. And baby, give us a time.
All right, G-Spot. Coming up next, stay tuned for Totally Different Holly.